Hey, Craig.
It's on you. It's all on me. Can't you see? It's on you. It's all on me. You and me. Can't you? It's on you. It's on me.
Hey, Craig.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, buddy.
Another great basketball weekend. Honestly, yeah, like I had a great, you know, Saturday in Pullman, and you know, the men swept and the women finally got off the schneid, and just a great basketball weekend. Just before we get started, this is Podcast Versus Everyone, episode 210. I'm Craig Powers. With me, as usual, is Jeff Neusser. And Jeff, yeah, like, I mean, you come into these weekends and you're just like, hope that they can take care of business. But in the back of your mind, you're like, it's all going to fall apart at some point, or they're just going to take a stupid L at some point. But they just come out and they like fully, they just fully took care of business. We talked about the Cal game already, but coming in Stanford, Stanford's a kind of a weird team, especially because of all the shooters they have. And that was really the only hesitance you had coming in. But, you know, WSU being a team that limits three-point shooting, limits the amount of three-pointers you can get up, really plays in their favor when they play a team like this. And they really lock Stanford down. Especially in the second half, and made a run. And it's just so cool to see this team over and over again finish teams and just play their best down the stretch. We've seen Kyle Smith teams that are not like that, but this team, they just, you know, Miles Rice and Isaac Jones, we say it over and over again, they just take over. And I guess it's just so cool that they can come through. And this weekend, when there's two games that just to maintain their status as like a near lock for the tournament, is they needed to just win those games, and they didn't just win them. They won them by a combined, 30 some points. And that's just how you do it. That's how you don't just maintain where you are, but you start moving up. And not to mention the fact that they're now 11-4 in the conference and a half game back, and they're setting up this huge matchup, which will be today if you're listening to it, or you may have already happened by the time you listen to it, but whatever. But yeah, like, it's
hopefully it hadn't already happened, because we're gonna preview the game, but hopefully you get the game.
But yeah, like what a cool ass weekend just to kind of cement this team as a very good team.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why we harp on KenPom is what we refer to most of the time, with efficiency margin, but the margin is the key part, right? Like, if you're a good team, you win by more points. And I know that, old school traditionalist fans will say things like, hey, winning is all that matters, and wins are wins. And yes, that's true. Like, yes, that is accurate in the most absolute sense. But when we're talking about the relative quality of teams, margin absolutely matters. And you play Cal and you play Stanford, and we were, I think both of us felt pretty good about Cal. We recorded after that game, but I think going into the game, both of us felt, pretty good. We were like, hey, they should have won the first game. They didn't. You can guarantee that that's going to be a point of conversation and a point of emphasis, for the team. And it certainly looked that way, right? Like they really kind of wanted to run it up on Cal a little bit. And then Stanford, we talked about last week, was, a little trickier, right? Like, it's not a team devoid of talent. And so when you're in the Pac-12, teams have talent and they can get you. And, this was a game that was, close for about the first 30 minutes. Stanford led, by five, I think, early in the second half. you know, we certainly didn't blow their doors off, but eventually our talent pulled through. Stanford, you know, didn't hit half their 3-point shots. You know, we just made life, you know, really difficult for them defensively, went away from the zone, which they seemed to have sort of figured out. You know, and all of that added up to a pretty long period of, you know, defensive strength. We kept scoring, Stanford did not. And then, you know, you just end up sort of like cruising to a 13-point victory. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that shows, you know, how strong a team is. A game that could have been a trap, a game that could have, they could have stepped in it pretty easily, right? In between the revenge factor against Cal and then looking ahead to Arizona. You know, that Stanford game is one that very easily could have gone badly. And it didn't. You know, they took care of business. Yeah, it was a little trappish. It felt a little, you know, you can tell me what the vibe was like inside because there were a lot of fans there. But the team just looked, you know, a little flat, you know, not like super flat, but just enough where you're like, there's a little edge off their energy here than what they normally have. You know, but they found it in time, and when they found it, you know, they kind of put their foot on the gas.
Yeah, and I'd say the vibe in the building was like, yeah, we're not playing well, you know, in the first half, and it kind of, but the vibe was also Miles will be fine. Like he played like crap in the first half, but
yep,
he's gonna make up for it, and he did. You know, his overall numbers weren't amazing, but you know, he settled down. You know, you could talk about the turnovers. That's one thing that can't continue. Yep. But if you look at it, you talk about it defensively, you know, one guy I highlighted in the preview is Maxime Reyneau, and because he had went before this game, had went 29, 20, 25, and 19. And against WSU, he had 8 points and 5 turnovers.
Right.
That, you know,
with only 8 field goal attempts.
And then, shout out to Oscar Clough, man. Like, he was highlighted in a story by Greg Woods today, which I strongly encourage anyone listening to read.
Really
it was
story.
An amazing story. But he really has, like, it's amazing, like, how far he's come this year, just this year. From, I swear, the first game, it was like, I don't know how much, you know. I remember it was like, you know, should they be giving Ruben more minutes, you know, whatever. But he solidified himself as he's the starting five because he is an absolute monster on defense. Like he just locks down the middle and he's so good about just about where he should be and how he plays screens and he's strong. And so like a guy like Reyneau is going to have trouble down low and you know, getting position. And yeah, like Clough was this weekend at Cal and Stanford, Clough's just defense just elevated. Yeah. And that feels really good going into like a game like Arizona where we're going to need that interior defense. And yeah, like Oscar Clough has just been, he's become like, just I said on Twitter, he's like, more of a Bennett player, more of a Dick Bennett player than anyone that played for Dick Bennett at WSU. Like he's such a Dick. He's such a Dick Bennett player. Like it's so ridiculous. He's got like this unique skill set offensively, and then he's just a guy that doesn't look like he would be an elite defender, and then has turned into an elite defender. Like it's just amazing.
He's not as athletic as Aaron Baines, but that's the easy comp, right? Like Aaron Baines was a bit more athletic. But
he blocks a hell of a lot more shots than
Baines.
Yes,
he does. Yeah. But that's even a recent development, right? Like he early in the year, we were sort of like, sure doesn't block many shots for being tall, you know. But you know, in the last, you know, however many weeks, he has really added that. And I don't know. I don't know. Like the story was really interesting. Talked about how Clough worked, you know, has worked pretty closely with Jim Shaw. Assistant coach Jim Shaw on the defensive end, on his defense. And it's interesting to me because I remember early in the year, right? He wasn't starting at the beginning of the year. You know, Ruben was starting at the beginning of the year next to Isaac. And when he came in, it was just sort of like, I don't know, man. Like I'm just kind of watching it. It's, he's okay, I guess. this is the guy that they were really excited about? Like, yeah. I don't know. And, but what I noticed was like, he was just sort of like figuring stuff out, right? Like he's just, he was doing a lot of observing, a lot of like, sort of like not tentative scared, but just like, okay, let me try this little move and let me move to this little spot and see how that is. It's almost like he was doing like the basketball calculations in his head of how things would work if he did this or positioned this way. And he was just kind of like testing, I guess maybe that's a better word. Like he was testing stuff out. And then once he kind of finally figured something, it was like, okay, here we go. And the resurgence, not resurgence, the surgence, I guess, on defense of him, feels, you know, somewhat like that where, you know, he spent a lot of the year like kind of like, you know, it's kind of testing some things out. I don't want to, you know, go all out trying to block shots and committing stupid fouls. So I'll just kind of hang back. And then from there, he started getting in better position and then just being big, right? Like just kind of arms up, altering shots by just being tall, to now he's affecting shots by blocking them. And it's like the, you know, we've talked a lot about, I wrote a long thing about how Kyle Smith's teams improve, but like you really can see it. Like it's palpable with so many guys on this team developing from where they were, you know, 20 games ago to where they are now. And Clough is a great example of that. Jalen Wells, you know, is a great example of that. You know, just the different things. I mean, not just, you know, being a dead-eye shooter. Yeah, you know, Chinyelu, who is, you know, not played a whole lot the last couple weeks as he recovers from being sick, but it's like, yeah, like he's gotten stronger. He's gotten a little more savvy in the post. He's finishing around Kimani. The bucket. Kimani depends on the day, but you do get really good defense from him.
But when was the last time Kimani has had just like a truly awful game? It's been a while.
That's true. Like that's a good point. He is contributing defensively. Like, yeah. There's no doubt. And I know that I was looking.
Banked in a three.
Banked in a three. Yep. I was looking at evanmaya.com, and it was showing kind of like our most effective lineup combination. So what he does, he's got like a two-man, a three-man, a four-man, or a five-man. So basically, like, what are your best, if you've got these two guys, any two guys, what's your best, you know, essentially efficiency margin with two guys? And the two guys are Clough and Kimani. Those are your two guys. Any lineup that features those two guys is better than any other lineup that features any other pair of guys, which is kind of wild to think about. But it kind of makes a bit of sense, not just because like when you think defensively, right? Cause Kimani can do so many things defensively and he alters a ton of shots. Like he gets his fair share of blocks for a 6'7" guard. You know, if you beat him off the dribble, he's kind of hunting from behind. And I think a lot of people know that now. And they're a little more cautious when they get into the lane. So, yeah, you know, just like we could name off guy after guy after guy after guy who's gotten better this year because that's just kind of what happens under Kyle Smith. You know, he's a program builder. He's a player developer. You know, for my money, maybe the best one of those in the conference. And, you know, it's fun to see it happen. Now, it's been happening for years, but it's like so incredible to see it happen on a level where unless something goes really, really, really wrong, you know, we are in the tournament at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's really cool. And you know that the rotation's been tight, but in college basketball, that's okay. Like you can get away with that
in college.
Yeah. I mean, some of the best teams in college basketball usually are only like seven deep at most.
Yep. I mean, most teams just don't have that level of talent. You know, to be able to go much deeper than that. And so it's, you know, you can be fine with six guys and maybe a seventh.
The funny thing about Clough, he's gotten really aggressive with his pokeaways now. Like he's actually generating steals and turnovers.
His hands are so quick.
Yeah. Like it's crazy. And I think that also contributes to why he's able to block shots. Because he's got anticipation and he moves quickly. He might not be like the biggest leaper, but he gets there quickly. He reacts really quickly. He's very smart. Knows, you know, he can read what players are going to do. Yeah. So it's been impressive and it was cool to just see him just be an annoying big dude. Like he had six O boards. I think three of those were on one possession. To be honest, You know, he had 12 rebounds overall, 8 points, and you know, 3 blocks, 3 steals. Clef was just awesome. Like, and so yeah, just it makes you feel better. Like, we feel like we're a better team than when we played Arizona last time.
Yep.
Yeah. Sorry. And so sorry, I had to cough. Yeah. So I guess yeah, awesome. Killer win. The vibes were good in Pullman. The student section not quite as big as you would hope. It was a holiday weekend.
A long weekend, yeah.
Holiday weekends are undefeated in Pullman. I did find enough students to do my trivia, and you know, the first video I've released of that, it you know, has done really well. People seem to enjoy that. So I appreciate everyone that was involved with that. I appreciate the Coug. That was super fun. But yeah, the vibes are fun in Pullman. Like, it was just fun to, especially like the alums that were there. We were just so excited to have like a good basketball team again. And there was a lot of alums there. Like, it was a very good alum crowd, probably the best one all year. And I think this next weekend against UCLA and USC is going to be very, very well attended.
Yeah,
I even think that Thursday night against UW is going to have a big ass crowd too. So yeah. I think they're going to get some, you know, some big 8,000-10,000 crowds in these last three games, and that'll be awesome. As hopefully they can just, you know, knock all those off and just keep stacking wins and get to a point where, you know, they could get better and better seeding.
Yep.
But yeah, so it was great to take care of business, not have to drop back onto the bubble, to stay off the bubble. Because yeah, if you lose one or two of these games, maybe it gets a little more bubbly. But now it's, you know, you're feeling good, and you're setting up now. Like, again, like this game on Thursday or on tomorrow or today when you're listening to it against Arizona is for first place in the Pac-12, and that's incredible. This team that started 1-3, they're now 11-4, and they're playing Arizona for the lead in the Pac-12 with, you know, yep, what would be after 4 games left, which yep, is just an incredible thing. And sometimes we talk about, you know, you and I have talked about just like, and you wrote about it in your newsletter too. It's just like, enjoy the moment and just like live in the moment. Don't worry about like where these guys are going next year. Don't worry about where maybe Smith would be going next year or anything. Just like sit here and enjoy like the fact we have this week leading up to this big game. And also, this is kind of like there's a lot more pressure on Arizona than there is on us in this. Like, yeah, Arizona's supposed to win these games. They're trying to get a 1 seed. They're trying to do all this stuff. They're supposed, yep, to win the conference, all that stuff. We weren't supposed to be here. And we've already beaten them once. And so yep, we're just playing like, hey, if we win this, then things are really, you know, then there's a whole new set of goals like right there, you know? But if we don't, you're still like, it literally does not impact your standing. You're like 90 plus chance of getting to the tournament, yeah, projected chance. Like you'll be fine. But that being said, it would be fucking awesome to win. And now it's just going to be, how much will this game look like that first one when we talked about, WSU was doing well on the blocks and dunks. And yeah, and honestly, like we came away after that game, it was like WC didn't play perfectly, but they still won. Right. And yep, and what we've meant, like I mentioned earlier, this team is better than that team that beat Arizona earlier in Pullman. And if you want some like kind of like tangible proof of that, in their last 10 games, which is after that Arizona game, WSU is on Bart Torvik in his bar tag, his Pythagorean ranking, is 11th nationally in their last 10 games, and Arizona is 10th. I tweeted so 10-9 earlier,
taking
but they're
everybody's last 10 games, everybody in the country, their last 10 games, and then ranking those last 10 games. And we're playing like the 10th best team in the country. or
11th. And then Arizona
11th best team in the country.
Yeah.
And Arizona.
Well, we were 9th and 10th like a few hours ago when I tweeted that out. But now it's 10th and 11th. But regardless, we're basically we've been playing roughly at Arizona's level for the last, month and a half since we've played them. We've been playing at their level. And so like this is a game that WSU can win. It's a tough game. Like there's really truly a tougher place to play in the West Coast. It's just, you're not going to get any calls on McHale. The crowd is insane. Like they're always hyped up in men's and women's basketball. It's just a crazy arena. Like that, it's a bunch of like 60 white-haired 65-year-olds that just like yell their lungs out. Like it's hilarious. But it's a tough place to play. But hey, you know what? They beat them there last year. Now I think Arizona's going to probably come in with a little more intensity than they did last year in this game. But so is WSU.
I mean, Arizona is, I don't know, man. They're a tough nut sometimes. Like, especially under Tommy Lloyd. Like, they will do all sorts of things that make you feel very weird about them. And, they'll not bring it in a game where you would assume that they'll have it. They will, and they're a flawed team too. I mean, that's the other thing. Like, I know they're very good. I know they win a ton of games, but they do not have, like, for example, when we talk about that first game you mentioned, right? We had all the blocks and the dunks, right? And it's like, I mean, Arizona's really only got one big. I mean, he's a very big. Umar Ballo is a huge, huge big who does a lot of stuff. But like when he's not on the floor, they're not very big at all. And he can be prone to foul trouble at times. There can be issues. So, and then they love to shoot the three. Caleb Love loves shooting the three. They didn't have a great 3-point shooting game against us. And I don't think it was super fluky. I mean, they missed some open shots, which, you kind of have to have sometimes. But, it didn't feel, crazy fluky.
Well, they shoot a good percentage from three, but they don't shoot a lot of threes. They're 303rd in they're 303rd in 3-point attempts and field goal time.
All right.
But they shoot a high percentage because they're like pretty selective. But that's the thing that plays well into WSU. That means they can limit the threes and really, like those shots you saw, like Caleb Love was hitting like really deep threes. So it was like, okay, if he makes these and we lose because of that, I guess that happens. But everyone else, they were, Pelle Larsen wasn't getting many threes and, any of the other guys weren't getting many threes. And so that plays in our advantage, like just to totally shut down that 3-point line, unless Caleb Love wants to hit 27 footers again, which is, it's hard. You can't stretch out that far and expect to play good defense. Yeah. But yeah.
I think that, the big thing that's going to have to, stay the same for us in this game, but change from what we've been doing the last few games. And you mentioned this was the turnovers. We've been over 20% turnover on our possessions in the last, like three of the last four games. And the other game was like 18%. That's just way, 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 way too high, like way too high. In the first game, I think we had nine turnovers, nine turnovers, which was only 13% of our possessions. And in a game that you won by three, right, that was tight all the way down to the end, the lack of turnovers. Yeah. You needed all those. Right. Especially in a game where, you're unlikely to get a ton of offensive rebounds. Now I do think in the first game so I'm curious kind of how this goes. We are a pretty good offensive rebounding team when we want to be. I think in this game, we sort of purposely, didn't avoid offensive
rebounds. To limit
the
break.
But we weren't really sending anybody to the glass other than maybe like one guy trying to make sure that Arizona couldn't run out, right? So, your biggest thing with Arizona is you don't want to get blitzed, which they can do. And they can do that to anybody. So the things that let them or that, fuel them blitzing you, one is, sending too many guys to the glass and then not getting that offensive rebound and then having a problem in transition. That's one. The other one is the live ball turnovers. Like, that's a huge one. They are fast and athletic, and they will take those live ball turnovers and they will go right to the rim, and you will have all sorts of problems. And if we keep turning the ball over at the rate we have been for the last four games, we're going to give up some pretty easy free buckets, and you cannot give up very many easy free buckets in Tucson and expect to walk away with a win. So that's going to be a big one. That's going to have to change. And Miles Rice is going to have to be the guy who changes that. I would assume, you know, the coaches are going to be all over him this week about that. I realize it's kind of a fine line, right? Like, he's a, somebody referred to him once as a free spirit, right? You just kind of have to live with some of the errors with him, but he's got to, like, you know, he had six turnovers against Stanford. You know, if he makes six turnovers against Arizona, that's going to be pretty killer. That's going to have to be something like three. So,
yeah, he only had two the first time around. One thing I think could make a big difference here is offensively Jalen Wells. He was one of six from three in the first game. And then and he's been shooting, you know, like 50% from three since then. So if he can go 3 of 6 or 3 of 7 from three, that makes a big difference. You know, that maybe makes up for some points that maybe you're not going to get at the free throw line that you got the first time, or, you know. We really didn't shoot very many threes. Of course, we don't generally. One thing that, you know, Ballo had a pretty tough game when it came to finishing inside in that game. He definitely murdered us on the offensive glass, but didn't quite kill us the way he could have because he was missing some layups. It's hard to think that he's going to go 4 of 11 on twos again.
Yes, that would be surprising.
That's something that you gotta think is in the math, that he's not going to go 4 of 11 on twos. Now maybe, but maybe someone else is going to, you know, not do as well. Maybe Caleb Love is not going to hit five threes or whatever, you know. I don't know. Like, but you got to think WC is going to have to kind of make up for that somewhere. And so getting more from Wells on the outside, threes from Yaki, scoring wise, hopefully Rube is feeling better. I think we're going to need all hands on deck, just defensive rebounding and stuff in this game, and Ruben's our best defensive rebounder. Definitely the one that could contend with Ballo on the offensive glass the best. It's tough. Like, you know, this they're gonna have to play well. I know we like didn't say they didn't play like they but that's the thing, they didn't. They're gonna have to play probably better than they played in the first game of Arizona to win this game. Yep. We're gonna have to shoot a little better from the outside, I would think. We're gonna have to rebound better in this game. They can't get murdered on the offensive glass. Like, Arizona had 22 offensive rebounds last game.
Yes. On the road. Like, that's gonna be, I think that's the thing, right? Like, it's one thing to get beat on the offensive glass at home where, you know, I mean, maybe, you know, you don't like if you get murdered on the offensive glass on the road, you're going to be sending the other team to the free throw line like 30 times. Like, that's just going to be how it goes. And so that's like a huge reason why like giving up that many offensive rebounds would be so problematic. Like, it's problematic in and of itself. But, you know, under those circumstances, they're just going to have to do a better job. And, you know, I don't know how I'm just not sure how you deal with Ballo. Like, one of the reasons why our rebounding has improved recently is it's been a real team effort, right? Like, you know, Jalen Wells is getting in there. Miles Rice has had some games where he's had 6, 7, 8 rebounds. Like, you know, they are really crashing hard as a team. Andre, of course, is pretty good at that. But it's like, even if you send four guys to the offensive glass, I'm not sure it matters, you know, because he's 7 feet tall, he's 260 pounds, and he's got a 7'5" wingspan. Like,
I'm not sure how Dante, much that matters. Dante in that regard, and Dante murdered us on the offensive glass. It's just he kills everyone on the offensive glass. Yes. Like, you know, he did it to an even greater degree against WSU. You know, maybe let's not let him get 8 offensive rebounds on his own. That would be great.
Yeah.
You know, and then let's not like Arizona get 42%. Another one was Keshad Johnson had 5 offensive rebounds played from, you know, the wing.
Yeah. And so that's those ones felt a little flukier. They were just sort of like ball bounce. There were definitely some of those ball bouncing around guy ends up
long misses.
Hands.
Yeah.
Especially in the late in the second half when they really started to jack threes. So how would you deal with Ballack? Because I think this is what I would do. I think that, I mean, number one, you just have to challenge Oscar Clough to just be super duper tough. You know, you're just going to have to be like, buddy, you somehow, some way are going to have to like, you know, push this guy around a little bit and get him off his spot a little bit. You know, just kind of keep him away. But when I think about, you know, some of the other guys, you know, I kind of wonder, you know, Balo, I'm not sure what his turnover rate is, but you know, it seems like his turnover rate's pretty low, but it's lower than it has been. He's been like around 16% the last 2 years, which is a little highish for a big guy who doesn't dribble at all.
Yeah.
So what that tells me is, now maybe he's gotten better at it this year, but what that tells me is he was maybe prone to being stripped around the basket. Yeah. So I don't know, maybe the strategy is something like, you know, you're not going to beat him. If you're Miles Rice, if you're Jalen Wells, you know, you're not going to beat him to a ball in the air. Like, that's not something you're going to do. But if he comes down with the ball, you can sure have active hands and try and strip him. And I wonder if maybe that becomes part of, you know, part of the strategy there as well, is just like, hey man, if we can't keep him from getting his hands on the ball, which seems to be impossible for like everyone. I mean, Craig, in conference play, I'm sure you looked at this, but in conference play, he's rebounding 17.5% of Arizona's misses when he's on the floor. Like, that is just like, I can't even stress how ridiculous of a number that is. To like rebound almost like, you know, one out of five misses by your team.
Yeah, basically 1 out of every 6 misses that your team.
Yeah,
he gets the rebound.
I mean, that is so unbelievably bonkers. It's hard to put these sorts of things in context, you know, for our listeners. But like, to try and do that, let's see, our best offensive rebounder is Oscar Clough, and he's at 11.8%, so 12%. Right. So you're talking 17% to 12%. That's our best guy. And then next down beyond him is Isaac Jones at 8.6%. And those are both like really respectable numbers. That both of those things would say you're a good offensive rebounder with those numbers. What Balo does is nuts. So I don't know. It seems to me maybe you need to come up with a little bit of an unconventional way to deal with him, and maybe like, you know, just basically planning on him getting his hands on the ball and then figuring out how to, you know, try to strip him with some quick hands down below. And maybe that's maybe you tell Clough that as well. You know, that's always risky because you could pick up, you know, silly fouls or easy fouls or referees assuming fouls. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe you need to go a little tricky with that one. Or maybe you just try to get him in foul trouble. You know, he's not really prone to foul trouble, but, you know, not very many teams play the way we do with bigs up front who can draw fouls. So I don't know, man.
Yeah.
But it seems like the game went, as you mentioned, kind of as he went. Not that he was bad or anything in the sense that, you know, he got all those offensive rebounds, but he was pretty terrible at finishing. I don't think that's going to happen again. So if you can limit him, it sure feels like, you know, Caleb Love is going to get his, Pella Larson is going to annoy the shit out of you, you know, whatever. But Balo's the kind of guy who can really like sort of flip the game for him, at least against us, where our strength is on the interior.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a WSU win's going to have probably like 7 or 8 3-point makes for WSU on 19, you know, 18 to 20 attempts.
It's probably going to have to be 40 to 45%, something like that.
And then their offensive rebounding rate is probably going to have to be under the defensive rebounding rate. It's going to have to be better than 60%, you know, 60%+ at least. Yeah. You know, we can't be good.
Like, if you can hold them to 35% offensive rebounds, I think you feel pretty good about that.
Yeah. And then
45.
Yeah. Like, I think those are two factors. And then the biggest thing, and you mentioned earlier, is just we cannot have live ball turnovers.
Yeah, the turnovers. Yeah.
Because you get the Arizona crowd. You get the Arizona crowd. You get them into it with runouts and everything.
Runouts, like dunks, transition threes, all the stuff that they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not just like what it's like, the noise. It's what refs start feeling when the crowd is that loud and what they want to call. You know, like, so it's a big thing. So yeah, like, I, you know, let's, you know, maybe they'll focus it. You know, Kyle does a great job when they play really good teams. Like, it's almost like it's a different team comes out when we play like these really good teams where we know that every possession is going to matter in the end.
Yeah.
And so I believe that, you know, they will do that. Now, will it be enough to win? I don't know. Arizona's super good. Like, WSU could play great in this game and still lose. We just watched Florida and Alabama play Alabama at Alabama, and Florida played a hell of a game. They just had a few lapses, but honestly, some of that was a product of just how Alabama plays too. Yeah. And then they end up losing. Yeah, they end up losing in overtime because, well, like you said, Alabama had that stretch of like just didn't miss three, and they just, you know, it's just like these teams that are really good. They just come at you in so many ways that even if you do feel like you succeed in one area, they can get you. And so, you know, because they still have, you know, Caleb Love, he could shoot them in or out of a game at any time.
Yep.
He was kind of in between at times in Pullman. He shot them out of it and then back in it at the same time.
Yeah. Which he does have a tendency to do.
Yep. It'll be interesting. And yeah, if WC wins, you know, they're first, and suddenly you're talking about, hey, maybe they could play in Spokane, like in the first two rounds. Like, yeah. if they win this game on Thursday, then you start talking about, okay, maybe they can get like a top five, you know, five seed, four seed, and play in Spokane.
Yeah.
Which would be incredible. I mean, just
that would be unreal. I'd be getting my press credentials, because I know I would probably never be able to get a ticket. I'd be getting my press credentials.
Oh yeah, together. I've already thought about that too. It'd be press credentials.
Like, I think I'll get a press pass.
Yeah, so. I think we'll have a big Kook Center press contingent there.
Yeah, for exactly. That.
But yeah, that would be pretty cool. But yeah, so I mean, there's another game this weekend too. I think Arizona State could definitely be a trap game. We talked about this on the road. I mean, the big thing though is Arizona State is a terrible offensive rebounding team. WSU should dominate the honestly, they should probably dominate the glass on both ends.
Yeah.
And that I really think like the interior WSU could dominate in this game. You look at what Arizona State doesn't shoot that well. WSU limits shooting. I really think this would be a really good defensive game for WSU.
Yeah.
To that, if their legs are a little beaten or shots aren't falling, they could save themselves just by limiting the amount of points that Arizona State scores. And Arizona State doesn't shoot free throws well. And that's the one thing WSU's been killed by, is that every fucking team shoots free throws well against them.
Yeah. The biggest thing Arizona State does, back to the same theme, not to be a broken record, but they generate turnovers. And their defense is good. They turn you over. They're number two in the Pac-12 in conference play in turnover percent, defensive turnover percentage.
And they limit turnovers too.
Yes, and they limit turnovers. And, you know, the funny thing is they're not a good, you know, field goal defense team, but they do turn people over, and that's how they... You know, that's essentially how they play defense. It's not really a good defense in conference play. They rank 10th overall. What's crazy is that they generate all those turnovers and they don't turn it into offense, which is kind of nuts. Like, their offense is horrendous. And they have like the shortest defensive possessions in the conference. They are a bit of a conundrum in terms of all those things. So I think the biggest thing we have going for us against Arizona State is Arizona State's just bad. You know, I think they're just not good. Yeah. Like, they're really not good. So they, you know, they've won two out of the last three, I guess. You know, they did beat somehow. I don't know how this. They beat Utah in Salt Lake City, which, like, we've never been able to do, but somehow they fucking did it. I don't know. But before that, they had lost 7 of 8. And all but one of those losses were by 9 points or more. So they were just kind of getting, they weren't just losing. They were getting beat pretty bad. They did beat, like I said, they beat Utah. They beat Oregon State at home. All right. You know, we're starting to feel pretty good. And then they go play at Arizona on Saturday and lose by 45. I watched that game because I was like, oh, we're going to play these two teams next weekend. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, Arizona wanted to crush them. Like, it was, wow. It was a whole thing watching that game. Arizona State pretty much sucks. You know, that's probably the best thing we've got going for us.
They shoot a lot of threes, but they don't shoot them particularly well.
They shoot them horribly.
Yeah, so that tells me they're, even as we're pressuring them and trying to push them off the line, they are still going to try threes, which means they'll be trying difficult threes, which is good for us. You know, And I think if you just look at the matchup of 2-point percentage when WSU has the ball and ASU has the ball, if WSU gets it inside, like, it's going to be over. Like Clough and Isaac are just going to just destroy them. And they don't, you know, they do have a, they have a backup big, and Gaffney's a pretty good shot blocker. But other than that, like, they're pretty thin up front. So if, as long as we don't turn the ball over up top, you know, you could really see them dominate inside. So, like, this is going to be about, you know, both this weekend. If you limit turnovers, they just really need to change that turnover tendency that they've had recently. Need to lock that down. That's the teachable moment from this weekend for the Cougs, is take care of the ball, because you have two teams that thrive on these turnovers when you go to Arizona. So you need to clean that up. And like you said, that's Miles. That's first and foremost is Miles in cleaning that up.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I'm excited. It's, you know, I in my, you know, after the game report thing that I do after Arizona, I said that I thought this was maybe the biggest regular season game ever. And you said, actually, and I was like, I forgot about that. It was what, 2007 against UCLA, same kind of deal, right?
Yeah, UCLA came to Pullman. It was the last two games of the year. And right, WSU was one game back of UCLA. And they played on Thursday. And UCLA won. There was a massive crowd. We camped overnight. I was a student. We camped overnight to go to the game. Didn't go to class that day. I think some people like left throughout to get the day to go to some classes. I don't think I did. I think I just I was like staying around. We camped overnight. It was a huge crowd. I think both the games that weekend were sellouts. So they ended up losing to UCLA. They beat USC. So they lost to UCLA by two games that year. But if they would have won that one and then beat USC, they would have had a share of the title, which has never happened.
By the way, do you want to know why I forgot about that? Now I'm remembering why I forgot. I just went back to 2007. Yeah. Okay, here's why I forgot. Thursday, March 1st, Sarah goes into labor with Joshua. That's what happened. I was watching that game and she started to go into labor and we ended up leaving to go to the hospital. And so I was kind of watching it on the TV in the hospital room, watching the end of it. But it was literally during the game, at the beginning of the game, that she started to go into labor with for people who don't know Joshua, my eldest son. So this is my kid who's a junior now and he's about to turn 17. He was born on March 2nd. So I remember I remember watching that game as I was frantically, it was on the TV while I was frantically like throwing shit together, trying to get Sarah to the hospital. So yeah, that's why I forgot about that.
That's funny. Yeah. It was, that's why, like it, yeah. The funny thing is, that's actually my second daughter's birthday, is March 1st now. And that's the reason why I won't be able to go to UCLA on March 2nd is because I have to go to my youngest third birthday.
I don't know.
I like being married. It's cool.
I mean, yeah, it's good, I guess.
I guess it's all right. But yeah, so that was a big game. This is very similar in that they're playing for first place late in the season. You know, if WSU wins this game, they're favored pretty heavily in their last four. Yeah. This is a big game. If they don't win this game, very good chance they win their last four and end up like 15-5 and in the conference and you know 24-6 or whatever, 24-7 or whatever. So either way, like that's this is like awesome if they win. If they don't, whatever, still everything's in front of them and you know they can do a lot of good things. Also, you never know. Arizona could lose a couple games. You know, they're weird like that.
That's hard to imagine, but it's possible.
Their remaining schedule is
I mean
not tough.
Home to Arizona.
They do go to UCLA.
Home to Oregon at UCLA. I guess those could be. And Washington could be a trap game. Like if they're totally hyped for us, you know, Washington comes in. I mean, Washington is not good, but Washington's also not horrible. You know, they've obviously got talent. Yep. We've seen that. You know, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't count on them losing two games, but it could happen, I guess.
But yeah, if you win this game, like basically, if WSU if they win out, they're the regular season champs.
Yes, indeed.
At this point. But you know,
it's kind of crazy to think about. Be like, we control our own destiny. Everything in front of us, man. Everything in front of us.
Yep. All right, and to that I say cheers, and so I want to know what you're drinking tonight.
Yeah, man. Okay, so I have a bottle of a 12-ounce bottle of The Abyss, a recently bottled version of The Abyss. So this was bottled just in November, so not that long ago. Nice little barrel-aged Imperial Stout. So I'm curious because it's very rare that I have one that's recently bottled. Usually if I get something like this, I just kind of throw it in the fridge and let it age for a while. And then if I'm drinking with you, usually you're pulling something out of the, you know, out of the cellar that's like, you know, super old, you know, been aging or whatever. So like what I'm finding with it is, I don't like it very much. I'm kind of surprised. I thought I would. And I was like, gosh, I don't really like it. Like there's a really strong bitter on the back end, like almost kind of like a distasteful bitterness on the back end. And I was like, did I get like, I don't know, like, is this just like an early, you know, like it hasn't mellowed at all yet. Is this something with me? Like I jumped on Untappd and I'm like, what do other people think after I had it? And other people seem to love it. So I don't know. Like what am I potentially experiencing here?
Well, one, I'd say it's got a 4.1 rating on Untappd, which for a barrel aged stout is not that high.
That is
like, I know that sounds stupid.
It's true.
Like that's stupid, but like, I don't know. Like, The Abyss is weird, and I don't know if I've really liked it that much since. Like I always say, like I think the last like really good one was like 2014.
Yeah.
For me, and it has always had that kind of bitter, that kind of weird bitterness to it. But yeah, it has cherry bark in it. It has licorice in it, molasses. That's kind of their signature is the molasses.
Yeah.
aged in bourbon. They always blend the barrels. So they age part of it in bourbon barrels, part of it in wine barrels, and part of it in just oak barrels. So it's probably not as like, it's probably not as tamed as it would be if it was just like a bourbon barrel. And I think most of the ones you've had were like just strictly bourbon barrel aged beers. And it was like 100% bourbon barrel aged. Like this isn't fully like bourbon barrel aged. There's wine barrel age in there and stuff. So it's definitely like a different, Abyss is a different flavor. And it's also kind of an old school stout where they're not trying to make it sweet. It wasn't a sweet stout. So like that bitterness, they're balancing it. They want to balance it. And so it's not like since you've like gotten into barrel aged stouts, I think they changed a lot since the Abyss was one of the first ones. They've changed quite a bit in terms of like they're a lot sweeter now often, or they definitely don't use molasses and stuff like that. So they're usually like 100% bourbon barrel aged, or you know some other type of whiskey barrel. So I think it's probably just like a very different taste, and I think it's fine. Like I haven't really been into it in a while. So I don't think you're crazy.
Okay, because I would not give it a 4.1 or 4.0 or whatever. I'd give it like if I was still doing like untapped ratings, I'd give it like a 3.75 or something. Like I'm just kind of like it's fine. I'm definitely catching some of that cherry. It's pretty low key. And then some of the other stuff, people are like, oh yes, you know, I taste the licorice and I'm like, I don't know, man. It just tastes really bitter to me. Like unpleasantly so. So anyway, I don't know. I got a Bodhi here to drink on the back end to wash it down.
They're at least like cheaper than they used to be now. Cause when they come out like those 12 ounce bottles, like for a 4-pack of those is like the same price as what the 122 ounce bottle would have used to cost. So
that's what I bought.
So definitely.
I have the 4-pack. So actually what I,
oh, you have a four, you have three go more ahead. Of them.
I oh, did so you get have the three 4-pack. More. Of them? So I'm yes. So I'll maybe space them out a little bit, you know, maybe I'll have another one in 6 months and I'll report back. We'll do our own little scientific test here. See what I think.
Some of those aggressive flavors will definitely like mellow out with age, although not as much with them because they pasteurize the Abyss now because they had 1 year where it was infected like early on, so they've been pasteurizing it for a long time, which just means they basically, you know, they get it really hot and kill all the make sure there's germs killed. Which is, you know, you definitely in Goose Island does that with the Bourbon County Stout now too, since 2015 when they had a bunch of infected.
Yeah. Ones. I remember when I came over to your house, you were doing a beer share for your birthday and we tasted infected Goose Island beers.
Yep. We did infected roulette.
Yes.
One of my favorite games.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah. But yeah.
What about you, man?
So I'm having a beer from Structures, another one that D got me up in Bellingham. This one's called Forest King pub style American brown ale conditioned on Steed Roasters Bygone blend, and it is delicious. It's basically a coffee brown ale, and it is delicious. Like the coffee tastes like a very good coffee, like a very very good roast of coffee, and then they basically added it to this brown ale and just like such a good combo. Like it's kind of like you're drinking a nice, really nice iced coffee. Like it's really good. Like I'm that's really awesome. Enjoying it. Like, yeah, it's a very tasty. And then I have an IPA from Single Hill that I'm going to drink after this, which is, they have this second brand now called, Dalliance Beer Project. So I'm doing the West Coast IPA from that. So I tried them. It was good. I got to go to Single Hill because we went to Yakima this weekend, and then I just had the one trip over, the one night over in Pullman. It was nice. Always nice to go to Single Hill when I'm in Yakima. Very good brewery. We love Single Hill. And then I got to see Sarah, from the Sounders Capo. So that was fun. But yeah, just a But yeah, this is the structure's beer, very solid. If you see it, I recommend checking it out. It's in this kind of like bronzy label. It's got like a skull with a kind of a crown of it's just like, I don't know, like it's a very metal looking label. But yeah, it's good. Highly recommend it. If you see it, Forest King, coffee brown ale, check it out. Yeah, very good stuff.
That sounds awesome.
But yeah, you know, men's team going down to Arizona this weekend. The women's team just went down to Arizona. Now, the Friday game against Arizona was a big bummer. And it had, you know, one of those, after the stretch that they've been on, just to get whipped by a team that you handled pretty easily up in Pullman when you had Charlize was a pretty big bummer. You know, Arizona's a pretty good team. You know, they're like a top 50-ish team. So that's going to be tough on the road. But just to lose like that, just to get beat so badly, it was a bummer. And then, but they came back, and Arizona State is not good. But they're still, you know, if you're not playing well, they have beaten some teams this year, like UW. You could lose. But, you know, they especially in the second half, well, you know, they kind of had them all the way, but really in the second half really took over the game and extended the lead. And that was good to see. It's good to see Tara have a big game because they also won when Bella didn't really have a good offensive. She didn't have a good offensive game. But, you know, you see Tara had a good offensive game. And you know, just, you know, LA has been having a lot of good offensive games, but she just hasn't got a lot of support. And I think what's, you know, you hear over and over again is they just don't have, like, leadership on the team right now. Because, you know, Charlize was not just the best player on the floor. She was also a voice in the locker room. And that, it's harder to be that if you're not playing.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the word talisman is the one that comes to mind, right? Like, it's...
Yeah.
She was the North Star. You know, she was the leader, and sometimes that can get overused a little bit, but I don't think it's over dramatic here. Like she was the center of the WSU basketball universe, you know, and she did a great job of making sure everyone else was a part of that too, but I mean ultimately it was her. And the team had looked, you know, pretty lost without her in the games, and honestly they've taken a lot longer to adapt than what I anticipated. But you know, after that Arizona game, they go to Arizona State and they, you know, crush the Sun Devils, which was so nice to not just like eke out a game against a bad team, but to like put it on someone. I don't know, man. It felt a little cathartic.
Yeah, it felt really good. I was getting ready to drive back to Yakima, but you know, I went over to watch the game, just watch our laptop in the Coug with Jamie and we watched that, and it was, yeah, very cathartic. And then we flipped over and watched, like, the triple overtime Arizona-UW game where Arizona pulled it out, which was great. So we were definitely rooting for Arizona in that game. So that was fun. It delayed my trip back to Yakima by about 45 minutes.
Woo!
But so, yeah, that was good. You know, it's always fun to see UW lose right after WSU wins. Which, by the way, when UW lost to Cal on Saturday, we were in the Coug, and that was fun. It's always fun. There's very like, I don't know if there's a better place other than like watching WSU beat UW in person.
Yeah,
like I don't know if there's a better place to watch UW lose whatever random game than in Pullman and at the Coug or my office. You know, like I don't think there's like, it's just so fun to like watch UW lose in those places. Like that's right. We were at the Coug and it was a big cheer. And some people were like, well
especially the way it happened. Right?
It's like, I don't, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like,
yeah, don't give a shit about quads when it comes to Washington.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the women now coming up, they have Oregon and Oregon State. Oregon State on Friday. Oregon State has been one of the hottest teams in the league. They also could be without Reagan Beers, which would be helpful. They definitely didn't look as, you know, they gave you a C a lot, but they didn't. I think with Beers they might have beaten them. But Oregon State has just been like so good for much of the year. They just weren't really recognized, and then and now they're up to ninth ranking the AP. But it's tough because, you know, they probably need, just to feel safe, that getting two of these last four would be big. And and you got it, but after this you go to Utah and Colorado, which the women's team has won there before, but these Utah and Colorado teams are really good. And we like don't have
top
Charlie's.
15 good.
So you got to think like that makes this Oregon State game huge to get. And the Oregon game. Like they need that Oregon game. They can't lose that Oregon game and want to go to the tournament. Like they really can't. But this Oregon State game is big, especially if they don't have Reagan Beers. She's one of the best players in the country. To have her out, you know, obviously we have one of our best players in the country is out, so it's only fair.
Exactly.
But to get to get the sweep this weekend, I think they'll feel pretty good about at least being a strong bubble team. But if you only get one this weekend, you're probably feeling like you got to get one in the mountains the following weekend to feel okay. Because they've dropped down to the bubble now. Like, they're on the bubble now.
Yeah. Well, we know the committee takes injuries into account. We know that, right? Like, so
and if
the committee is going to look at this team in two segments. They're going to look at what they did before Charlize. They're going to look at what they did after she got hurt. And right now, when you look at after she got hurt, you know, we are 1-5, right? Like that's bad. That's really, really bad. So, you know, you got to show that you belong after that, you know? So if you can beat Oregon State and Oregon, then you're in really good shape, right? Oregon State, the committee doesn't look, at least doesn't seem to look right. Like we always say like the committee, but it's like, you know, based off of what we've seen them do, they don't tend to look at game by game. So they don't look at like a game and be like, oh man, you were missing this player for that game. But they will look at like, you know, if you've lost someone for the rest of the season or for a huge stretch in the middle or something like that. And so, you know, if we can beat Oregon State, they're not going to look at that one game and be like, oh, well, Reagan Beers didn't play in that game, so that doesn't really count. Like they don't do that. They will look at, okay, you. How did you play without your main player? Because she's not going to play in the NCAA tournament, right? So that's kind of the biggest thing. You got to show that you can play, and if you can win a couple games here, that's massive, right? You know, so you potentially finish the year showing the committee, like, hey, we figured some things out. We had a rough patch without our best player, but you know, now we've sort of figured some things out. So, you know, and I think the committee will also be aware, you know, you're talking about the best, you know, women's basketball conference in the country. You know, even the teams that aren't quote unquote good, you know, don't suck, right? I mean, you're talking, you played Colorado, they're number six, they're going to be in the tournament. You lost to them by six at home. You know, you played Utah, they're number 20, you lost by 12 that game. I mean, I know that, again, the committee's not going to look this deep, but that game was, you know, close-ish, you know, until the fourth quarter. You know, you lost to Cal again at home, but, you know, Cal, I think Cal's a tournament team, right? Like they, I think they're in that.
I don't know if they're a they're in the conversation. I think they would have to.
Okay, so they're in the conversation. So you're talking like a bubble-ish team. Stanford is Stanford, you know, whatever. You know, at Arizona, that's probably the one where you're sort of, I mean, Arizona's not bad, but you're also kind of like, eh, you know, like getting beat by 20 in Tucson's maybe not the best way to, you know, put your best foot forward. But, you know, coming back and winning by, you know, damn near 30 in Tempe, you know, that kind of helps maybe balance it out at least a little bit. I mean, Arizona State's not good, but, you know, putting it on a team that's not good is a good idea. And that's what they did. So hopefully they can carry that over.
Yeah, hopefully. It'd be great to have another great basketball weekend.
Yes.
You know, it'd be, you know, and it would be great to see both men's and women's team go to the tournament in the same year.
God, that would be amazing.
An amazing, cool thing. But yeah, Jeff, so I just got to say, you know, Jeff has been crushing it, writing up stuff on the website, the podcast or Is it pod versus everyone or podcast versus everyone?
Podcastversuseveryone.com.
Spelled out, podcastversuseveryone.com. Really, you should subscribe on that. Jeff's just been cranking out some really nice pieces. Good thing on Kyle Smith earlier this week.
I'm having fun writing again, man.
Yeah, you can tell.
it's nice. By the way,
I can tell. I can tell in the writing. I'd highly recommend checking that out. If you want to check out the video that I made doing the trivia, and I'll probably do another one. My Instagram is at
oh my god, that Craig was amazing.
At Craig W. Powers, or my TikTok is Craig W. Powers as well. I can't really, the Twitter limits the length of the video, so I can't really post the full one on there because they're like three. It's like 3 minutes long, and I'm probably gonna do another like 3 minute video.
It was fantastic.
But the Coug also the Coug posted it on their page, so it's on the Coug's page too, if you follow them. A lot of people have seen it. It's like at 11,000 something views. So,
and it was liked by Pat
on
Chun.
Instagram. It was liked by Pat Chun and Michael Bumpus. So
yeah,
either one of those.
My favorite was the girl guessing about Klay Thompson's free throw streak. And you were like, okay, that's way too, she started with 100, like, okay, that's way too high, but it's still really good. And then eventually she hit it. And you were, I loved your celebration. Like she had just, won the lottery or something. It was fantastic. It was super funny.
Hey man, if I was a college kid and someone gave me a $10 gift card,
hell yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's like, that can get you, hell, the double gin and soda that I get there usually is like $9. So
yeah.
$10 is a lot, man. I do not turn my nose up at $10.
Thank you to, Morgan Narbia, our new writer.
Yeah. The meme queen.
The Coug meme queen. She's great. It was nice to meet her. And then Marnie also helped with the video in later as well. Weirdly, my mic stopped working after the game. So
no.
Actually going to have to not just use, TikTok, but I'm going to have to go on to the, open up my dusty old Mac and use iMovie on there because, you can do some like background sound reduction and stuff that you can't do on your phone. So I might have to actually do that for some of the Coug clips and stuff because it's quite loud in the Coug behind us. I think we were just getting the phone audio because it's not loud enough, because as you can see, like in the one, I was like kind of being funny and holding the mic too close to my to my mouth, and it was like very loud, and then it was not loud at all after that. So the mic was failing us. I don't know why. Go check that out. It's really funny. And Jeff, huge game tomorrow or today, whatever. Hopefully you're listening to this before. And if not, you're listening to it and they won and you're just like, oh, it'd be fun listening to the preview, whatever. Either way. With that, I say go fucking Coops.
Go fucking Coops, Craig. Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Get vaccinated.
Get vaccinated
and support a union.
Support a union.
Even if it's soccer referees, support it.